From childhood, Andrew Berman knew his mind didn't function quite like other people's. He'd sit on his bed and think of it as a spaceship and keep elaborate scores on the traffic passing by his house. At 13, he cleaned and polished his spaceship every day. His life really revved up in the 1980s. Nonstop drugs, promiscuous sex, alcohol. He became an art dealer. He perpetrated a famous art scam. He was incarcerated. Andrew Berman is one of nearly 2 million people in the United States who in any given year are diagnosed as suffering from manic depression. Many of them respond well to medication, but Andrew Berman did not, and eventually he volunteered for ECT, electroconvulsive therapy, the most extreme form of treatment. Berman writes about his life in a new memoir called Electro Boy. Here's a list of his things to do, which opens the book.
January 6th, 1991, 25 items. Number 1, bleach bathtub, toilet, and sink. Number 2, make Holocaust documentary. Number 3, start tofu tuna diet. Number 4, work out 5 days a week. Number 5, buy new scale. Number 6, confirm $35,000 wire transfer from art collection house.
I'll just say that the rest, some of them are for things one might actually do, picking up medications and that sort of thing. But point number 22 is write novel and screenplay in a given day.
Right.
You didn't actually think you could do all those things, did you? Or did you?
I figured I could probably get these things done in about 3 or 4 weeks. I thought all these things were possible. I mean, I was invincible. The sicker and sicker I got, the healthier and healthier people thought I was, because the more productive people thought I was and the more creative and energetic I was. And I was fooled by it, too, because I was working 20-hour days, flying around the world and selling art, making business deals, and, you know, there were concrete results.
For people who really have not encountered someone who's in the thrall of a manic high, could you tell us a bit more about how that feels?
Well, I used to walk down the streets. I used to walk up Madison Avenue in a very euphoric state, and I used to think, oh my God, I'm taller than these 20 and 30 story buildings. I can look down at the streets, and these buildings are below me. You really are larger than life. It's this quality of not knowing what your next move is going to be, of not knowing how risky it's going to be.
You take risks that are breathtaking. And another feature of the manic condition is the narcissism, the inability to judge risk, the hypersexuality and promiscuity, that might be evinced in almost anything, even the promiscuity of making clothing choices. There's a shopping spree that you go on in here.
Right.
Where was it? At Barney's, I think?
It's at Barney's.
Which is funny if it weren't heartbreaking. You just sort of talk about how that felt to go through that store?
Right. It starts off kind of normally, looking at jackets, and then it becomes a little bit more obsessive. And I can't make a choice between 2 jackets and 3 jackets and 4 jackets. So then I start just deciding on taking all of them, and then I just say, okay, forget the jackets. I'm going to look at shoes. And then I look at 2 pair of shoes, and I say, okay, I'm going to take those. I look at cashmere sweaters. By the end, I've purchased everything, and I'm in a sweat, and I'm freaking out because I've probably spent about $20,000. I get into a cab. I take a deep breath, you know, and I drive from 61st Street to 62nd Street to Ralph Lauren, and I do the same thing again.
Your mania peaks with a criminal incident, which is not atypical, when you forge the art of an artist for whom you're working, a Mark Kostabi. Eventually you do jail time for these forgeries. But what was so curious about it was there's no ability to really tell or feel what is improper or what is amoral or illegal, is there?
Not at all. But to take it even a step further, at my trial, I was so ill that I wasn't even aware that I was the defendant. But I felt sorry for the defendant, and I thought, oh God, the defendant, what an idiot. He's left this huge paper trail, and now we've got to get him out of this mess. I hope we do. I knew in the end the defendant was going to get it. I knew he wasn't going to get it on all five counts, but I knew the jury realized the case was a sham, so they were probably going to nail me on one count, and that's what they did.
Your symptoms deepen. Eventually, they are hallucinatory. You're seeing outlines around people. You're having more and more suicidal thoughts. The drugs are not working, which puts you in a minority even in this illness. And you decide to see a doctor who you know is going to recommend electroshock. Was there a significant incident in which you thought it might be time to consult
Yes.
such a doctor?
Yes. I was walking on the street. I somehow knew it was one of the last days. I called my doctor and I said, I don't think this is going to go on much longer for me. And she said, come in, bring your parents. And I knew that this was the conversation that was going to lead to electroshock.
The title of your memoir is Electro Boy. I thought that was perhaps a title you gave yourself, but it was sort of amusing to see. It's what your Jamaican nurse calls you as you're being wheeled out of the shock treatment room.
Right. Right. And I think the most important thing to say is that I made the choice because there was no other route to go. I mean, after my first treatment, a half hour after coming out of recovery, I felt great.
What's your life like now, Andy?
I take medication four times a day. You know, I see two therapists during the week. But otherwise, my life seems very, very normal to me.
Seems good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very, very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Andrew Berman. His new book is called Electro Boy.